He was shouting, open the register, and he started saying something else, but he took that extra step too close and snatched him up.
Listen, gang, Lucky Gunner has both fantastic content and great prices on ammo. Enjoy the convenience of online purchase and crazy fast shipping. Experience why Lucky Gunner is one of our favorite spots on the Gunternet. Go to get-ass.com/Lucky Gunner. And while you're there, check out Magtech Ammunition. Magtech is the exclusive range ammo for the Active Self Protection Team, and we are grateful for their commitment to quality and support. You can buy Magtech ammo at the Lucky Gunner link. Remember to tell them both that the Ass Podcast sent you. All right, welcome to the Active Self Protection Podcast. I am your host, Mike Williver, your favorite former Fed. With us today is a man of some note here recently. He's blown up, gone viral on the internet, on the news, on TV, for interrupting a would-be armed robbery at a convenience store in Yuma, Arizona, our home state. His name is it James Kilser?
Sure is.
Outstanding. James, welcome, and thanks so much for coming on. I know you had a lot of other offers. Are you from Arizona originally?
No, I'm not. I came here because the Marine Corps brought me to Yuma in 08. But I'm originally from upstate New York, Thousand Islands and Fort Drum area.
When we got a hold of you, I noticed you had a Maryland area code, so I was excited to think you were from my home state, but no, upstate New York. Both of these states, not terribly conservative?
No, New York State is not conservative at all. In my neck of the woods it is, but it doesn't matter because of the way the politics go. The state is all run by the city, so.
Yeah. Yeah, New York City is the elephant in the room, for sure, or the 800-pound gorilla, as it were. So, James, are you married? Do you have any kids?
I am married with an 8-month-old girl.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations. First kid. That's exciting. It's been a long time. It's been 30 years since I had a first kid only. So you grew up in upstate New York. Did you grow up around around guns or fishing, hunting, anything like that?
Yes, it's very prevalent where I'm from. I think I was 8 or 9 when I got to shoot the first time. So
very cool. So I know prior to this incident, you were you'd been in the United States Marine Corps. I thank you for your service, by the way. And you had been at Yuma. It's an air station, right, in Yuma?
Yeah. Yep, it's an air station here. And I was with MAX 1, Marine Air Control Squadron 1 here in Yuma.
Very cool. So did you go through basic in San Diego or South Carolina?
Parris Island.
Okay. Yeah, that's a whole. I was never in the service, so I can't get into it. But I know there's some feelings between Marines, West Coast Marines, and East Coast Marines. But we'll it's just for another show. So, what kind of small arms and sort of hand to hand training does the Marine Corps give you? And do you feel like that prepared you at all for this incident?
You get a lot of like just basic military hand to hand stuff. The Marine Corps has its own martial arts program, and sorry to disparage it, but it's kind of a joke even amongst the Marine Corps. Until you get to the upper echelons of it, it actually becomes somewhat, applicable, in my humble opinion, but, you might just say. And I only reached the level of gray belt, which is the second level of it. So I'm not a ninja by any means.
And have you taken any sort of martial arts or self-defense training outside of the Marine Corps on your own?
Not really, no.
Then I guess we'll talk about the incident here in a bit. I guess you might say that you don't feel like that necessarily prepared you for this. The actual, not being a Marine, obviously, but the Marine Corps hand-to-hand, did it have a bearing on this, do you feel like?
Oh, I'm sure to some degree. I wouldn't say that it, like, it's not like it had no bearing whatsoever, but it's been so long since I've been out that, it's the muscle memory part of that, I guess, really doesn't, I don't feel it carries over for 15 years later.
I know that, walking into a convenience store, do you mind telling us what kind of store it was? Was it a Circle K or what?
It's a Chevron.
Oh, Chevron gas station. Okay. You weren't walking in there anticipating a violent encounter or an attempted armed robbery that you had to get in the middle of. I like to say that people who have a car accident immediately after, my first thought was always, I wasn't planning on having a car accident today. This is kind of messing up my plans. What can I ask you? What were you there to? Were you there buying gas, or what were you getting?
So I needed gas, and I was out of Gatorade's house, and so I went and stopped and got a couple Gatorades, a couple Monster Energy drinks, and a full tank of gas for my Jeep. So, yeah, it was like, and I actually have to drive into town away from my work and then drive back to go to my work because I live out in the boonies. So,
okay. So what can I ask, what kind of work you do now?
So I work as I'm a Defense Department civilian contractor, and I remote Russian tanks, cars, trucks, American tanks, American armored vehicles, and stuff like that. We turn them into remotes, and then they shoot them with, you know, artillery and missiles and stuff like that, and airplanes for practice rounds.
That's very interesting. So you take stuff that to make it a remote control vehicle of some kind, and the military gets to blow it up and practice shooting at stuff.
Yep.
That's very cool. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, we also do Russian radars when we play bad guys.
You broke up there really quick. You said you also do what now?
We have a couple Russian radars and we play bad guys.
Well, that's also very cool. Interesting. And can I ask what you did in the Marine Corps? What was your MOS?
That was 5979, which I don't think exists anymore. And we were ground-to-air communications.
Interesting. Okay, so I know like the... I know that the Air Force has something like that. So when you say ground air communications, kind of what does that mean? Are you're on the ground communicating with aircraft, or is there more to it than that?
So it's called tactical controlling. So basically, in a nutshell, after ATC does like landing and takeoff and stuff like that, and once you get a certain distance away from the airfield, it goes to a tactical controller, and they deconflict all anything that flies through the air, whether it be civilian aircraft, military aircraft doing missions, artillery falling through the air, anything like that. They deconflict it all, maintain the airspace, and you know, the one's talking to the pilots. And then we would bump the radar feed up to the aircraft.
Interesting. So, I mean, I'm assuming that means the bottom line is you want to make sure we know who everybody is, and if somebody isn't one of ours, we want to know that.
Yeah, so we don't go dropping a bunch of ordnance on some poor Canadians like we did in Iraq.
Yeah, that was terrible. So let's talk about the day this happened. Was this before or after work? What time of day was it?
It was 4:30 in the morning, and it was before work.
4:30 in the morning. Okay, I don't think I knew that. That's interesting. And you had gotten your gas, walked inside, and we've seen the video, obviously. Everyone's seen it. You walk in, and had you heard these guys before you saw them, or tell us about that?
So I was talking, I'd got my stuff paid and was talking to the cashier, Everett. We kind of know each other a little bit. I was telling him, you know, hey, you know, you got to quit being a cashier and come work out at the base of us and get a good job out there, and kind of just chit chatting and laughing about having a good laugh. And you see in the video, I about halfway turn around and kind of looking over my shoulder. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know. And then I hear the door open extremely aggressively. Nobody needs to be that aggressive this early in the morning. And as soon as I turn around, I see, so from the video, it's two guys with one in the door, but from my perspective, three guys stacked up right behind each other, come in the door. And I see the first guy has a gun, and that's kind of puts me in, you know, my spidey senses kind of tingled. And then, hey, I see the gun, and it's okay. Now we got to be ready to go here. This is happening. And I just kind of watched, and I did a quick scan and didn't see any other weapons behind him, on the two guys behind him. So that's my guy right there in the front. And I just waited. He took an extra, he was shouting, open the register, and he started saying something else, but he took that extra step too close and snatched him up, hit him like a ton of shit. So.
In your mind, did time slow down? That's a frequent thing people say during in a event like this, that things slowed down a little bit. Did you experience that sensation?
I guess you could say in a way, but for me, it was, so I did not know, if you watch the video, I have my keys in my left hand and the bag are either in my hand or around my wrist on my right. So when I saw the gun, he was pointing it past my head off to the left at the cashier. And I looked down the barrel and I kind of, there's like a half thought in the back of my head of, that's an awfully small barrel. I wonder if that's a real gun. Kind of just, you know, that little voice in the back of your head. But I had no idea that I drop my keys, no idea, the bag still attached to me, none of that. So from basically from the point of the snap go until I had him turned around with the gun to his head and realized that the place was clear, I did not, there was no thought, no recollection, none. It was all just one blank. I did it all and it happened. And then all the information came rushing back to me after the fact of this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. It was really surreal after it happened. But while it was happening, there was no thought. It was just, it happened. I did it. I don't know how else to explain it.
So how old would you say this young man was, the one was that had the firearm?
So after I had him detained, he told me he was 14. I mean, but he's a juvenile. I know he's a juvenile because the sheriff's department has said that. But as to exactly how old he is, I don't know.
So once you'd gotten him down, I want to say the other two guys just dipped right away. They just beat feet out of there, right?
So I had tackled him across the whole lobby. And in the video, you see the guy in the door was gone pretty much immediately. And the guy right behind him, who was actually in the store, falls on his face trying to get out, and then he gets back up and runs out the door. But I did not know that until, so I tackled him across the lobby and landed on a stack of energy drinks. And kind of looking back on it was kind of funny because they're the orange ones with the butterflies on them. So I literally tackled him into a pile of butterflies. But so we go flying across the room, we land, and it's funny because I saw some slow motion footage of it later on. And it was because I was like, I grabbed it once and carried him across the room. But if you look at the slow-mo of it, because in my mind, I did a single overhand grab. But in actuality, if you look at the slow-mo, I grabbed underhand. He pulls the gun out of my hand and I immediately go and grab it on an overhand and tackle him across the room. So when we hit the far side of the room, I have an overhand grip on the slide and I'm reaching around him because when my hand goes up and he hits him in the face with the bag, I was actually trying to take control of his head. I wasn't swinging the bag. I didn't even know the bag was still attached to me, but it kind of threw my arm off. So I missed and the bag smashed into his face and may or may not have broke his nose, but there's a big old puddle of blood. But anyway, so we hit the far side of the room. I have one hand on the gun. It's pulled into his body. So then I'm reaching around him and I managed to get my hand around the grip of it and finger on the trigger. And then at this point, he's got one or two hands wrapped around the gun to some degree. And I release with my left hand and go to grab him around the neck. And I bring the muzzle of the weapon up his torso. And as I'm doing that, I'm grabbing by his neck and swing him around because I don't know if the other two guys are bum rushing me. So I swing him around to get him in a hostage position in between me and his buddies that in my mind are coming at us. So at the point of where I have him swung around and realize that the room's empty, it's at that point that everything that just happened from the snap go all the way to there all caught up to me. It was one of the most surreal things that, I acted so fast. My mind had no idea that I was acting until after it happened. And then it's like, oh, hey, by the way, you just did all of this. At that point's when I realized I had pulled the trigger four times when we were fighting over it. And that's when I realized I'm pulling the trigger on this gun. And I just counted four times. I just counted four trigger pulls. This gun's not going off. And it felt like a cheap Chinese gun, like Chinese plastic freaking toy gun. You get a bunch of sand in and it doesn't work anymore. You pull the trigger, kind of creaks and doesn't do anything. That's what, once everything caught back up, my mind was like, hey, this thing's got to be a toy. It feels like a toy and it's not working. And you're pulling the trigger on this guy and it's not going off, whether it's a toy or not. And so then at that point, it's like the whole room's empty. The other kid who's the cashier, barely walking out of the back room. He was in the back eating ramen noodles. And so I immediately, okay, threat's over, transfer the kid to the ground. He basically at this point turned into a wet dish rag. And so I throw him down on the ground, and I go to cross his ankles. I watch a lot of cops, so immediately went to go cross his ankles, stand him up, and then sit on his legs to put him in a detention position. And as soon as I go to reach for his legs, he crosses his ankles and throws his legs up. And I'm like, nobody just does that, you know? Like, you got to get kind of either got to get forced or told to do it. And so that's what makes me think he's a frequent flyer. And so I ended up getting him posted up, transferred to the back onto his legs, sitting on his legs, and he starts crying about how I'm hurting him. I went ahead, and set the gun off to the side, and I was looking at him, and I'm looking down, and I'm like, this guy is really small. And I asked him, well, how old are you? Because it kind of hit me, like, how old is this guy? And he's like, I'm only 14. And I said, oh, you've done fucked up. You're going to prison for this. And so he's crying on the ground, his big old puddle of blood from around his nose. And I still, at this point, think this gun's a plastic gun. And so I, you know, the other kid who came out of the back, he's kind of young. He didn't know what to do. He's kind of panicked, half panicked, like, what'll I do? And Everett, the clerk who was behind the counter, he had jumped over the counter and ran out the door to go see where the other two guys were, where they were going, and just saw them run across the dirt lock behind it. And so he comes back in, and it was kind of wild because, you know, when I had gotten him turned around and the gun to his head, it was like I went from like over 9,000 down to 100. And then once I got him down on the ground and, you know, he was completely compliant, it went from 100 to zero. And it was like cool as a cucumber. Hey, get the customers out of the parking lot. Make sure there's nobody else. Call your police department. Call your manager. You know, call whoever you got to call. Make sure that the alarm button's put. Like, and the guys are kind of, oh, okay. You know, they're kind of catching up at this point. Like, yeah. This just happened. We got to get into, you know, take care of business mode. And it was just, you know, having never been in that situation before, it was kind of surreal how it happened. Because, you know, you always see in the movies, it's like things happen in slow-mo, but like, nothing happened in slow-mo. It just all happened. And then it was like a big drop, like, hey, take care of business, get this stuff done. And yeah, it was kind of wild. And at that point, so the other cashier, the one who was in the back, he's talking to the dispatcher, and he's telling him, oh yeah, it's a fake gun, you know, or a BB gun or something. And something in the back of my head says, you need to check that gun again. So I leaned over and grabbed it, and I'm trying to open it up, and I can't get the slide to open. It's all jammed up. And eventually I refunded it enough to where the slide pops open, and I felt around hit my hand. And I'm like, oh. And so I look at my hand, there's a 22 caliber round in my hand. And then I lock the slide, and I'm trying to get the mag out, and I can't get the mag out. Eventually I rip the mag out of it, and I tell him, hey, tell him it's a real gun. It's a Walther 22, two rounds, one in the tube, one in the mag. And so they're like, oh shit, it was a real gun. And they're telling the dispatcher. And so then at that point, I throw the gun, the bullet, and the mag over by the door, like well out of reach. Because at first it was like, you know, just a, you know, an arm's length away. And now it's like, I want to get that completely away, get it all the way over by the door. And then a few minutes later, you know, I had him held down for a few more minutes, and then the deputy showed up, the sheriff's deputy, because where this happened, there's no PD out there. It's all sheriffs. So the sheriff showed up and took him into custody, and I don't know what happened. And that was the end of it.
So when the deputy showed up, can you just walk us through that real quick? I assume, did they walk in guns drawn, ready for action, or were they already assured that the action was over and it was safe to commit?
Oh no, they already knew. She could see because both the doors, the double glass doors, were open. So she came up pulling out a set of cuffs and just, you know, hey, hold this arm while I take the other one. Gave her the other arm, held the other guy's elbow in a chicken wing, and she slapped cuffs on that hand, switched over to the other one, and then did a quick transfer. She put a knee on him and transferred over, and then she stood and said, "We're standing up," and stood him up and got him out of there. So, I mean, it was already done, and like there was no, I'm not saying like they weren't taking it seriously, but like there was no threat by that point and everyone knew it. So it just got taken care of.
The gun, how did they, when they came in, I assume they had to step over the gun to get to you?
Yes, they stepped they could see it plain as day. She looked down, saw it, stepped over it. But it was slide open, slide locked the rear, and it was, you know, mag and bullets sitting on the ground right next to it. So, it was plain to see that it was thrown out of the way and didn't present any threat anymore.
Right. So as you're holding this kid down waiting for the police to show up, is he saying anything to you? And if you can't, if you can't say because of the court case, I understand.
No. It's, all he said was he whined about me putting too much pressure on him. He also said, when I asked him how old he was, he said he was only 14 and he's crying and bleeding out his nose. That was about it.
So let's talk about after this all went down. You know, I talked on the show to Stephen Williford, who was the guy who intervened in the Sutherland Springs, Texas church shooting, a terrible day. And we talked about the aftermath with the media coming down like a ton of bricks. It took them, they were at his front yard in no time. So what was that experience like for you after this happened and the video came out? Talk to us about that for a second.
The media, it's all just people. Oh, hey, we want to see your story. And just a whole bunch of that. Other than being a big pain in the butt because my, everyday life is disrupted by it. I did get my first tabloid article about me. According to some British tabloid, apparently I work for the Sheriff's Department. So when I go see Wilmot this Tuesday, I'm going to have to ask him for my back pay.
That's great.
That was kind of funny. They jacked that story all up. They made me sound like I came in like Rambo and was in the right place at the right time, right. Defending the public. And it was cheesy and stupid, but whatever. Let those silly teetotalers think what they want.
Yeah, I guess, you can't control the media narrative. They're going to say whatever they're going to say, and you kind of got to roll with it. But I think you've handled it pretty well thus far. So moving forward, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. Are you a concealed carrier of a firearm or no?
I do on our state allows it without a license. So I do when applicable. I'm kind of a boomer with my everyday carries. I carry a Mark VI Webley.
Wow.
Or a full-size 1911. Those two I carry in the winter when I have a coat or something to wear them under. Or I have a Smith & Wesson Airweight that I pocket carry. A boomer.
Smith & Wesson Airweight. Okay, no. I'll tell you what, man. The best gun to have in a situation is the one you have on you. So as long as you're carrying. I assume you were not armed at that moment because you were on your way to work at the base?
Yes, that's correct. Federal facilities, you can't even have it in your vehicle. So, but you know what, though? With how young they were, it's probably a better thing that went off without having to shoot.
Yeah, for sure. Nobody wants to shoot a 14.
Any of them. So,
is there anything we haven't covered that you wanted to talk about?
Not for the story, but if I can give a shout out to my friend Nate Kuba and his company he's got out there in Phoenix, I'd like to.
Sure. What's the company?
So it's Nameless Armaments. He can be found at namelessarms.com, and he does sight cutting and circuiting and pistol sight machining, and it's all top-notch stuff, does it all in-house, and he has some of the fastest turnarounds for custom work like this in the industry, and he's actually was one of my instructors when I went to school in Phoenix for diesel and industrial mechanics, so he's a real good guy and treats his customers well. And again, that's namelessarms.com. He's also on Facebook, Instagram, and all the other social medias.
Very cool. Man, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Pretty exciting, pretty harrowing event. And it's funny how much different these things come across when you're reflecting on it versus what it looks like on a video, for sure. Folks, don't forget to stick around for my interview with Steve Gutowski after this. Good stuff, Gutowski Files. And James, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, gang, welcome back. This is the next episode of the Gutowski Files with Steve Gutowski. He is the founder of The Reload and the host of the Weekly Reload podcast, on which I was recently a guest. Probably, everyone is saying it's the best episode he's ever done. Everyone is saying this. Steve, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I've got a little bit of cold, but I'm hanging in there.
I can barely tell with that nasally Pennsylvania accent. How can anyone even tell if you have a cold?
Let's be honest. Probably sound better, to be honest. You get that like deep throaty action when you got that cold going on in there. You know, makes your vocal cords even more enjoyable.
The Lou Rawls effect. Yeah, he's wearing Eagles gear, but we're going to let him stay on the show anyway. Despite
it's
that,
it's embarrassing fact. After this week's loss. But you know,
yeah, as a fan of the football team, I can't talk smack to anybody about anything right now. So anyway, so folks, this week we're talking about the tragic incident that happened on set at a movie starring Alec Baldwin. Everyone's heard about this. It's been all over the news, where he was handed a prop gun, quote unquote. We'll talk about that in a minute, what that means, and was using it in a scene, and it discharged, striking two people and tragically killing one young woman. There's been articles about all sorts of aspects of this, so we're going to take kind of a deep dive on it and discuss Hollywood and guns, the knowledge of how guns work on a set, things of that nature. And Steve and I were talking offline a moment ago. I guess the story is that there is a prop master, a relatively new prop master or armorer.
Yeah, the armorer.
Yeah, who prepared the firearm in question and either put it on a table or handed it to an assistant director, who then handed it to Mr. Baldwin, who then used it in the scene, firing it and with the tragic results that we just talked about. So I can tell you something from experience. When I would do force-on-force training as a firearms instructor in my old agency, if anyone's going to be pointing any kind of gun whatsoever at anyone else, it was the strictest protocols. We're going to go into a shoot house with some munitions. Every single agent, task force officer was stopped, pockets inside out, frisked head to toe, no knives, no batons, no pepper spray, certainly no rounds of ammunition, no regular guns. So I'm not familiar with how a Hollywood set works, but somehow a real gun with a live round in it got on the set. And there's all sorts of stuff surrounding that. So, Steve, do you remember where you had heard that, I guess, on some of these shoots, especially out in the desert, where they might take some time off and go do some shooting out in the desert? Is that a thing?
From what I've read, it can be something that occurs. I mean, obviously, it sounds incredibly unsafe that live ammunition would ever come onto a set where they're using blanks or any sort of prop guns capable of firing any kind of ammunition. You would think that it would not be on set. Now, I just like there are circumstances where when you're making a movie, just like with force-on-force training or something, where you may be in a situation that you're pointing a gun in what would normally be an unsafe direction. And there may be circumstances where you use live ammunition during a photo, a movie shoot. But I would imagine that you wouldn't want to combine the days that you're doing shooting with actors and production staff where you're using blank rounds with the same time period or the same set that you're using live ammunition for something. Now, we don't know exactly why there would have been live ammunition on the set. There's just speculation that it's because people were using it to kill time, between shoots or whatever. But if that's the reason, that's wildly unsafe to ever mix blanks and live ammunition like that.
Let's talk about live ammunition for a minute. We discussed this offline, but when someone refers to a live round, anyone who has any experience with firearms, what that means to them is a complete cartridge of ammunition,
right?
Casing, primer, gunpowder, and a projectile or bullet.
And that's actually one of the problems with this story, is that you're getting kind of what is apparently industry jargon, processed through media sources that don't have any understanding of
publicists,
of firearms. Yeah, and then it's coming to us where you and I understand what the firearms industry or firearms training industry has a certain understanding of terms that it sounds like it's maybe different from what Hollywood uses, which is another problem in my mind, because that, you know, because there's a report in the Los Angeles Times that from one anonymous source that live rounds in Hollywood just means any kind of ammunition, whether it's a blank or a complete cartridge with a bullet in it. And that's obviously problematic because everywhere else, a live cartridge means a complete, round of ammunition with a bullet included in. Now, you wouldn't necessarily call a blank a live round. So then you also have reports that there were misfires of with prop guns earlier on the set of this movie. And again, to you or I, or anyone who's gone to like a gun safety course in the real world, a misfire is a specific thing. It means that when you pull the trigger, nothing happens, right? Or you get one of three things could happen. You could have a light primer strike or something where the round doesn't go off at all. Then you could have a hang fire where it's a delayed reaction between when the hammer drops or the primer struck and when the round goes off. And then you could have a squib load, which is where a bullet gets lodged in the barrel of your gun due to some sort of malfunction with the ammunition. Now, I don't think any of those things are what these, you know, reports are referring to. We're not really sure what they mean by misfire. It's probably, I think two of us guessed that it is probably more like ammunition was loaded into the gun when it wasn't supposed to be, and somebody pulled the trigger and it fired, which is, again, would not be a misfire. That's that we would call that a negligent discharge.
Right.
Right. In the firearms community. So there's this whole layer of apparently different terminology that gets used in Hollywood, if the reporting is to be believed, at least. And we all know, again, the problems with reporting on firearms. So it's hard to decipher some of this stuff at some points. But regardless, it appears what happened was somebody somehow loaded live ammunition into the revolver on this set. And then it was passed through at one point an assistant director who was 68 years old, so he presumably had a lot of experience on the set, who told Alec Baldwin that it was a cold gun, which at least there's some shared terminology, right? That means it's unloaded.
Right.
Like nothing is loaded in that gun. That's what it's supposed to mean. And so Alec Baldwin took this, I guess, as the truth and went on to do this rehearsal shoot. And at some point he pulled the revolver from the holster and fired a round, which struck the cinematographer, right? And then the director as well, which again, sounds much more like something that could only happen with a live round with an actual bullet rather than some sort of blank mishap. Although blanks are also, you know, dangerous things in and of themselves, even without the projectile involved, you can still harm or kill someone or yourself with a blank, which has also happened in the past on Hollywood sets. But although very rarely, I don't want to exaggerate the circumstances here. This is, as far as I'm aware, only the third time on a Hollywood set or an American set where someone has been killed with, a prop gun or during the filming of, a TV show or a movie. So it's not something that happens very often. This is probably the most famous incident because it's the most famous actor to be involved with it. Although Brandon Lee was killed in the 90s. Right. He's the son of Bruce Lee. So anyway, it sounds like there was quite a lot of negligence involved here that led to this horrible, horrible outcome. And I think, frankly, that there's a lot of blame to go around, not just the one armorer, but everyone who handled that firearm along the line should have followed more strictly safety precautions. Like at the very least, they all should have been checking whether or not that gun was loaded.
Yeah, concur. And I think another thing we want to talk about was the fact that it was a very young, very new armorer. She even expressed herself in an article in Reuters. She expressed that she was nervous about being the person to do this, but she'd done it once and felt more confident. But here's a 24-year-old brand new armorer on a set dealing with a very powerful group of actors, directors, producers. And I understand, I'm not saying this is a fact, but they had a walkout. We talked about it. They had a walkout of the cameramen, cameramen's union, whatever that is, saying, look, they're having us do unsafe things, working very long hours and driving, you know, an hour to our hotel every night. And if they were hurrying this movie, this is, again, this is just conjecture on my part. If they were rushing things because they had a deadline to meet, I can imagine it's possible some corners got cut. And a 24-year-old armorer is not going to question a powerful actor or producer on a movie set, I would dare say.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that came into play here. Certainly what you talked about as far as the walk-off of the union is accurate to what's been reported. We obviously don't know for sure whether or not the rush or the pressure to get this movie completed played a role here, but it wouldn't obviously be surprising if that was the case. And yes, certainly someone brand new to the profession may have allowed themselves to be pushed around more than they should have. Additionally, somebody who's been doing this for a long time, like Alec Baldwin or the assistant director, may have become complacent because Alec Baldwin's been in a lot of movies where he's handled firearms before without incident, right? And just like in, you know, the law enforcement world or the firearms training world, people who've had a lot of experience with handling firearms are not immune to complacency.
Nope.
And can then create problems where, you know, a negligent discharge is the result. Now, that's why the safety rules that we're meant to follow at all times are redundant, because if you get complacent and you screw up one of them, you still have the other two
right
protecting you. So if you get complacent and you point a gun where it's not supposed to be pointed, if you don't put your finger on the trigger, or you're not going to be able to fire that gun. If you pull the trigger, but you've already treated the gun as though it was loaded, you know, you'd made sure, essentially you checked to make sure that it was not loaded beforehand, right, you're not going to have an issue. So, you know, that's where, like, obviously there's some, you know, nuance to how gun safety rules work in practice in terms of, like, if you're taking down your gun, you're cleaning your gun, a lot of times you're going to have to pull the trigger. You're going to point it at something you don't want to destroy necessarily, but that's, you know, more a nuance of language, I think. So you want, as long as it's pointed in a safe direction, that's not at, you know, not at anyone. And as long as you've checked that the gun is clear before pulling the trigger, you know, that there you're still going to be safe. And so that's what should have happened. But my guess is that people got complacent. They'd done this 100 times before on 100 different sets, and it was always safe and it was always fine. And the gun was always cold. It was always unloaded when they were told it was unloaded. And the one time it wasn't, something like this happens.
Right. And let's talk for a minute about the responsibility of the actor in this case, Mr. Baldwin. And we folks, we take no joy in this. We know Alec Baldwin is probably pretty, you know, different from us politically, but I'm not a fan of the memes. I'm not a fan of the joking around. Someone lost their life, and I'm sure Mr. Baldwin will be living with that for the rest of his life. However, we got to talk about the level of responsibility of anyone, any actor or anyone else in, you know, live acting, could be on a stage, could be on a movie, where they're handling a firearm that's capable of shooting a live round. And I made this point to you earlier, Steve. If Mr. Baldwin was doing a movie where he's a pilot and he actually had to fly an airplane for a period of time, I assume he would do training and he would be capable of doing that and competent. There's no reason why, it doesn't matter what kind of gun it is, there's no reason why an actor can't be capable of clearing a gun, you know, dropping a magazine, putting a slide to the rear, or checking a single action revolver, whatever, to make sure it's either clear or, more importantly, that the ammunition being used is in fact inert, blanks, whatever the case may be, and doesn't contain a projectile.
Yeah, and certainly, and I honestly don't see any reason why I would be happy that somebody I don't like accidentally killed someone. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand the reason why that would give anybody any kind of joy. You know, it's horrific. That woman was a mother of a small child, and a wife, and an up and coming cinematographer, apparently, in this profession. So it's horrible what happened to her. And I don't feel any sort of vindication or whatever that Alec Baldwin was involved in it. At the same time, I, you know, I feel bad that Alec Baldwin is going to have to live with this, but I also feel like he ought to have checked the gun himself. Everyone who handled that firearm should have checked to make sure that it was unloaded.
100%.
They were apparently trying to do this scene with an unloaded firearm, and they should have all ensured that it was unloaded. Everyone along the chain who ever handled that gun on set should have been able to check to see if the gun is unloaded. It is not difficult to do. Mm-hmm. It's not even that difficult to tell the difference between a blank round and a live round. Not that that's really what's at play here, because the gun again was supposed to be completely unloaded. And in that case, anyone who has any basic level of training ought, with whatever gun they're handling, ought to be able to tell if it was loaded or not. And if they can't, then they shouldn't be handling it, whatever the circumstances are. I understand that just like with force on force training, right? There may be a circumstance when you're shooting a movie where you have to point a gun in a direction at a person you wouldn't necessarily do. I think that that should be minimized as much as possible with, you know, camera angles and filming techniques. That should only be necessary in extremely rare circumstances. And in those circumstances, you ought to have some very strict protocols in place to mitigate any risk that's involved with it. And everyone should have an understanding of what could happen, that everyone involved. And so that's where, you know, it's difficult for me to say that anyone who handled that firearm on that set that led up to this event isn't at least partially culpable for what happened, given the negligence that had to have occurred for it to, you know, carry out this way.
Yeah, agreed. And for all of our, you know, all of our private citizens carrying guns, our military law enforcement people who carry guns, this can happen to you. Don't think it can't. If you decide to get slack on the safety protocols, if you decide to get complacent, if you're in a hurry, and all those things appear to potentially have contributed to this tragedy. Folks, if you're lamenting the lack of down the middle, sane and sober for reporting on the Second Amendment, please go over to thereload.com. Give this man some money. He's an Eagles fan. Give him money anyway. He's great.
Feel pity for me and give me money.
You should send money to me, because I found the one articulate, intelligent Philadelphia Eagles fan, and you got to hear him talk. Folks, go over to thereload.com and give him a couple of bucks to support his outstanding work and reporting, and check him out on the weekly Reload podcast. Steven, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey friends, this is John Correa. If you like the podcast, if it is bringing you value, do me a favor. Just rate the podcast and leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us out.